Oh, I was a little kid. My mother had a hi-fi. I listened to music on the hi-fi. And when I got to be a teenager, I wanted one of my own. And I got a crummy one. And then I started making it better and just kind of snowballed. Yeah, and I didn't have any money, so the way it would snowball, excuse me, is to start building your own. So I started out. The first amplifier I had was a Radio Shack with some germanium transistors, and I found a full range sort of speaker at a store, and they were about $10. And I put those in cardboard boxes. And then later on, I put them in wooden boxes. And then later on, I put a port in them. And then later on, I got a tweeter. Then later on, I got another amplifier. And then I got a better turntable. You get the progression. And then by the time I got to well into high school, I discovered there were other people who were starting to build their own stuff out of kits and such. Icos, Dynacos. And got to college, and I more Icos and Dynacos and so on. And then I ran across people who were building their own amplifiers from scratch. And I had roommates who were building speakers. And so there were just simply a lot of people who were into that. And we would all become roommates and have large stacks of all the magazines laying around, and that's what we did. We read the magazines and worked on our hi-fis. And I fell in with some guys who knew how to build their own amps from scratch. The best of them was Pete Werbach, who, by virtue of his existence, I not only got deeply involved in amplifier design, but also he got a job at ESS, which is the speaker company doing a startup in 1972, and they were hiring people with talent, and I needed a job, so that worked out just swell. So I ended up at ESS. So I learned a lot of amplifier design from Peter and whatever books he would give me and so on and so forth. Also, I was deeply involved in speaker design. I was in R&D. At ESS, I arrived about a week before Oscar Heil and the Heil Transformer did. So I actually got to see a sleepy little company turn into a big-time operation, and I got to see it from the ground floor. All of it. I like to think about it. I like to build it. I like to listen to it. I like to sell it. And so that's what I do. I think there's a lot more pleasure to be had making your own. For incredibly less, but I mean, I don't knock it. I sell those kinds of amplifiers for a living, so I don't have any conflicts at all with regards to that. If people want to buy an expensive amplifier, that's great. But again, most people can't afford that, and there's nothing like having built it yourself, anyways. There's really nothing to match that, and you graduate from building a kit to building something from scratch, and then you start changing it. And when you get familiar enough with it and you've done it long enough, you start designing, and you get quite serious about that. And it's not really so much rocket science. I mean, a lot of it is just simply being reasonably intelligent and interested and willing also to just put in the time and the work. It's a lot of work. Well, I don't know. I mean, I finished school, but the only reason I did was because I had such an investment in it already. And it seemed a shame to just blow it off at the end. So I went through the whole program. But having said that, I was already working in the industry while I was going to school. I mean, in other words, ESS finished putting me through my college education. There were two types of people who came out of ESS, the people who learned what not to do, and then the people who did it that way. And I was one of the ones who learned what not to do, and it served me very well. You know, if it's what you really love, it's what you should do. It's not that hard. Like I say, It's not beyond anybody's real capability. They just have to care about that thing and want to do it. Oh, I love listening to music. I mean, that's really how I got into it. And it is, you know, in large part the prime focus. It's one of those things, you know, when you build something or make something that's extremely good, I mean, there's the absolute pleasure of having that. But on top of that, it's accompanied by the pleasure of going through your entire record collection and listening to everything all over again. I love listening to music, and I love listening to recordings, and I like, you know, I mean, I love live performances when you can get them. Well, you know, I just built a house at Sea Ranch, and my next door neighbor is Jerry Immel, the composer, and he's best known for composing the music for the TV series Dallas. In fact, he goes, "There's the house that Dallas built." But he and I have talked about this, and I think we're just in total agreement. Movie music, most specifically, I think movie music, is the classical music of this time. And there are very few movies that can get by without it. And I find that almost all the movies that I absolutely love, I love the soundtrack first and foremost, often more than the movie itself. And there it is. Yeah, and it's a very different experience watching something while you listen to, because two-channel, which is my specialty, is a stare at nothing activity. And it's like reading, in one sense, it's a little bit like reading a book, in that your mind is filling all those images in, whatever they might happen to be. If you look at if you watch the music being performed, or if you're watching a movie that accompanies it, it's an entirely different experience. And I think it's just processed very differently. And this goes back to why does home theater sound different than what people are doing with vinyl and two channel? Because they are two different aesthetic. And of course, then there's car audio, a whole other aesthetic. All these people are processing music differently. Are you aware that there are two parts of your brain that process music? That there are actually two separate neural networks that are taking in input and interpreting it in some way or other? And I don't know that they operate independently, but they are in fact two separate parts of the brain doing that work, which is kind of interesting. The whole thing about how people hear and the kind of illusions that they are subject to when they are listening to things. There's various illusions and paradoxes known in acoustic science, psychoacoustic science, where they will play something that will fool an audience. But if they poll the audience, they'll find that the audience has been fooled in different ways. And not only that, but the guys who are fooled this way will have come from the East Coast, and the guys who are fooled this way will have come from the West Coast. And then they track it down even further, and what you've got is it was based on the regional accent of their mother. And here they are perceiving various and sundry sonic illusions in this category or that. And it's, what accent did your mother have? Was she up in the Northeast, or is she down in the Southwest? Now, you take that and then you go, gee, and how are they listening in Japan? It's like, it's actually extremely remarkable that the whole thing with objectivism and music and hearing is a very difficult thing to reconcile with the experience that people really have. And we all have the really different experience, partly based on the accent of our mother. So it's the old, what color is the sky in your world? I think it's, you know, but it's like anything else. It's very individual. If you want to get really good at it, you know, like if you want to be a critic, go listen to a million recordings or a million amplifiers. No, I think the beauty of doing it yourself is that you can have a different experience and recognize it. It would be like making wine. You typically don't ever quite get the wine you thought you were going to end up, you thought you set out to make. But and it's not always good wine, but you can always appreciate what it is. You know the experience that led up to it, and with a little luck, perhaps you can make it better. But you still appreciate the different stuff. This little amplifier that I built for this occasion, that's not really that good an amplifier. But it was a pleasure to listen to. You know, I doubt that I would live with it for any length of time, but it's just like, you know, it's trying something new. It sounds different. I can enjoy that. Well, there you are. They get kind of a bad rap. In that, but I mean, people who are into wine kind of get the same thing. Oh, it's kind of funny. You watch a movie like Sideways, and it's laughable, and yet, oh, I understand wine really well. I'm an audiophile. It's very much the same sort of thing. Yeah, very much.